Welcome. It is the podcast episode number 4, Pride of Detroit, the Detroit Lions blog for SB Nation and the PODcast, which is the Pride of Detroit's podcast. So there you go. If you're looking for the band POD, the 90s called and they want you to give everything back. Like, we can't have this in here. Like,
how dare you talk to the youth of the nation like
the
that?
Youth of the nation. The Lions are not the youth of the nation. I'll just say that much.
Oh, man.
So that
already getting down.
Yeah, already getting down here. I'm Chris Lemieux, writer for Pride of Detroit. And that right there is Jeremy Reisman, fearless leader and managing editor of Pride of Detroit. We're running two right now because I gave, Alex Reno was going to be back on, and I gave him the night off from coming on this. And then Ryan Matthews, who's been a fixture, his streak on this podcast has been broken at three now.
He's finally gone.
He's finally gone because he was moving, quote, my entire apartment into my parents' house. So proceed to make fun of him there because, I mean, like, we've just been savage with each other on this podcast. I saw you once again took a shot at Reno and his fantasy team.
Yeah, I mean, I am a fan of, you know, just plucking that low-hanging fruit.
And, we should.
Oh, of course. And beating it into the ground, you know.
We are all family here. Some of our family just likes, you know, different things. Some of our family moves their stuff into their parents' house. Another one loses to their mother in fantasy. I like watching things burn, apparently. And that's what we're going to talk about today. The Detroit Lions. Speaking of things burning.
Yeah, I mean, when things are the way they are with our team, like, we just start devouring each other. So no one is safe.
This is, I'd like to think of this podcast as like a little port in the storm. There's not going to be a lot of angriness here. We are going to talk about one thing that's going to make people angry, which is Mr.
Try and guess.
Yeah, yeah. One particular person. I won't say his name yet. And we're going to talk about Seattle. And we're going to talk, we're going to take your questions again. Those seem to be popular. But let's get into the quick hits here real quick. Only two notes this week here. Reaching outside the NFL for a second. In case you don't follow the NCAA too much, particular college football and this whole pipeline to get guys to the NFL, the O'Bannon law case has been going on. Ed O'Bannon was I think he was some kind of assistant or assistant coach at USC. And, like, he kind of basically sued the NCAA over some of the things that came down when Pete Carroll was there. And the court today ruled that the NCAA basically breaks antitrust laws, which is big, like, for several reasons. But that's just something to keep in mind just in case, you know, the pipeline starts to wither. And it is for football. It seems to be weak in a couple places, like youth football and concerns there about head injuries and now college and
I mean, college football is kind of a mess right now. I mean,
it's
really
always
football
been
in
a mess
general.
Though I mean, but
that's true, but I feel like it's coming to a head at some
it
point.
It is coming to a head. It's just always been a Byzantine corrupt sport, and that's also why I love it.
Yeah.
We all love college football for that.
And it's weird, we're coming into a place where both the NCAA and the NFL are coming under fire for pretty bad things that have been going on and just been swept under the carpet for a long time. And as such a big football fan myself, it's kind of hard to come to terms with all that when I'm on, you know, in the NCAA's case, I'm on the player's side. And then in the NFL, I'm also on the player's side. You know, these people are putting their bodies on the line. And it's hard to kind of balance that where, you know, I want to watch football. I love football. It's hard to come to terms that it's hurting people's lives.
I guess it might for some. For me, I've never had that problem. And it's not because of a lack of empathy. For quite the opposite. I am a crazy bleeding heart liberal. But I will tell you where this has helped condition me is that I'm also a very big boxing fan. So, like, I'm used to watching a sport and yet at the same time cringing as I know, like, what's going to happen to the person I'm watching play a sport later on. it's a hard thing to do. Nor do I think that just because you recognize, like, hey, there's something really wrong with this sport, that means that you have to stop watching. Because that's kind of the refrain, right? It's like, yeah. Well, if you're so disgusted, don't watch it. No, I mean, you can watch it. Like, you can still have fun with it. Because you not watching ain't going to change it.
That's true, but there is some sort of guilt that comes along with, you know, hating the NCAA's policies while feeding into them by watching games every Saturday.
There's guilt in drinking too, but I'm still going to drink. I'm still going to make my mules.
I think what it comes down to is I'm not a perfect person. I can be hypocritical at times.
None of us are. None of us are. Yeah.
So even though I rally for players' rights in the NCAA and I hope to God the NFL figures out a way to figure out their concussion problem.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still going to watch.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Other note here from the quick hits, that one took a little longer than I anticipated. Marshawn Lynch is, quote, 50-50 for the Seattle game, end quote.
Yeah, and I want to believe that matters.
Seattle-Detroit, I mean, but yeah.
We saw Thomas Rawls be pretty successful against Chicago Bears with the exception that obviously it was the Chicago Bears.
Yeah. I mean, but granted right now against this Detroit defense that can't really guard the corners, and the edges, do you really think, I mean, maybe it might be a little better, but not by too much.
I don't know. It's hard to say because the run defense has been okay in two games. Yeah. Out of the three, they were good. They were okay against San Diego. They were okay against Denver. But both those teams aren't great at running the ball. San Diego was, you know, running Melvin Gordon out there for his first game.
Yeah, actually, I just pulled up the DVOA stats. Detroit ranks 14th in rush defense, but 24th in pass.
Right, right. So before, I mean, I'm kind of getting into the Seattle preview a little bit here. I think it's an okay matchup in terms of defense. The Lions defense versus Seattle's offense, because they're not really a passing team like we saw Denver last week.
I'm not going to lie. This story is mostly interesting to me because I want to know if Rawls is going to be playing because I can pick him up in my fantasy league.
Well, I'm not going to get into that. As most people know, I'm not into the fantasy thing. So I don't feel any sympathy for you, and I'm not going to give you any advice.
No, that's okay. No, I will go get advice from Ryan Matthews and not Alex Reno, who loses to his mother in fantasy.
I'm sorry. Ryan Matthews is dead to us now. We can't talk about him.
Yeah, yeah, he snubbed us tonight. So
he did.
he will be on tomorrow on Pride of Detroit writing about your daily fantasy tips that you should be doing for, is it FanDuel that sponsors us?
FanDuel, yep.
Okay, just want to make sure. They both seem very similar to me.
By the way, we have to mention FanDuel at least 15 times during this podcast now.
We're not really brought, but if FanDuel wants to give me money so I can produce this podcast, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I mean, you're throwing so much of it at ESPN, might as well give some to me.
Speaking of which, I heard that DraftKings signed a deal with the NFLPA.
They did. Yeah.
Which that's going to become horrific.
That's terrifying for television right now. Because now can you imagine a goob like Drew Brees suddenly pushing DraftKings on you?
Oh my God.
Like,
can we all agree
Wrangler
here
commercials that... right?
Can we all agree that FanDuel and DraftKings, all that is gambling, right?
No, it is, and I just think that all gambling should be legal because, I mean, I got into fantasy and I kind of like it, but you know what I like more? Gambling on a point spread.
Oh, man, no, I can't get into that gambling thing. There's too much randomness in football, and I'm also not as smart as I like to think I am, so...
It's fun. Gambling's supposed to be fun, even if you lose a little bit of money here or there, but I've also made some good money, so...
Well, there you go.
Yeah, we should probably wrap it on... I mean, man, I'm just imagining some of the guys who could be on those commercials now. Like, actually, speaking of the Lions, what was the last one to really do a commercial? Was like Matthew Stafford? What was it? He did like some. It wasn't Men's Warehouse, but it was like some men. Was it Joseph A. Banks?
I don't know. I know Matthew Stafford's been on a couple SportsCenter commercials, and he did one for.
I'm not talking this is Sports Center ones because we have Calvin Johnson and a bunch of those guys. I'm talking like Matthew Stafford did one that was basically like taking on the idea of you look like a total slob. We will. This is a men's clothing line that will make you look really good. And was it Van Heusen? Yeah, it was Van Heusen. It was Van Heusen. That's terrifying. Matthew Stafford and Van Heusen. Yeah, that I remember. I remember those. You don't remember those commercials?
I don't think I saw this. Is Van Heusen a local business? I don't know. I don't even know what that is.
Van Heusen, a local business?
You can tell I'm not a stylish person. When Matthew Stafford talks about dressing like a slob, he's probably talking about me.
I'll have to get this to you later, because I don't even know where to even look for it. Apparently he was in like a Dish commercial, Network at some point too.
I remember the Dish commercial. Basically,
that's the one, because everyone has that like wide-eyed Matthew Stafford gaze.
Yeah. Their avatars are all that.
Dish
commercial. Anyways.
Anyways, we should probably get back to actually talking about, like, real things.
Sure.
We're about 10 minutes into this podcast, and people are going to be angry at us again.
People's pitchforks are running out of fire, so let's get into it.
All right, so I don't want to talk too much about Denver.
Yeah.
I just don't. Like,
there wasn't anything surprising that happened in Denver. Our offensive line continued to be terrible. We knew Von Miller was going to beat the crap out of us, and on defense, it was okay, but the Broncos' offense is pretty bad anyway.
On the podcast, I don't try to retread ground we've been writing about.
Right.
I think that's kind of the difficulty as I'm looking out here. I'm like, what else could we draw out of this desiccated corpse that is, when this podcast goes live, going to be four nights old? So instead, let's go and rally around the person that we are all about ready to just, like, brutally savage.
And that is pitchforks.
Joe Lombardi.
What a
chosen son. we're going to start on Joe Lombardi. I was originally going to write something that was like putting Joe Lombardi on trial. It's humor. It's not, you know, angry. But I decided to put that off for a little bit just to kind of collect some stuff, because you came out, Jeremy, with a big article that kind of blew up on it. Are the Lions tipping their plays? And I can't help but notice the picture that you used in there. It's Joe Lombardi.
Right? It is.
That, he's the scapegoat right now, right? Like,
he is.
Before we even get into any of the logical talk about what may or may not be going wrong with the offense on plays getting jumped and everything, like, he's the one taking the brunt of it right now.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's rational or not. I put this out on Twitter where I don't really like to be the guy that's blaming coaches, because we don't know what they're doing. 95% of their job, we don't see them doing. We see them only on game day. And
yeah, we're not even talking about like a head coach. We're talking about the guys who are always the least popular guys in town, which are the coordinators.
Right, right. And so when anything goes wrong on either side of the ball, it's their fault. And in terms of like predictability, that sort of stuff, It's hard to know. And it's hard to know if he's giving Stafford the tools to check out of certain predictable looks, things like that. We don't know any of that.
How much is that like the offensive line, the fact that it just crumbles within like a breath thrown on it? Like, right. Von Miller was just like, there was no one guarding. Like, there were people assigned. There were Lions assigned to guard Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware. But they weren't actually stopping DeMarcus Ware. He was just running right over them immediately.
I'm not sure Von Miller got touched in that game.
No. They were... Cornelius Lucas was a ghost.
Right. And then, you know, a lot of... I hear a lot of complaining. I don't hear a lot of, you know, solutions. People are like, oh, well, you know, get a tight end to chip block him or anything like that. And you saw the tight ends try to block in that game. Tim Wright fall on his face. Granted, he tripped over a guy. You saw Ebron, who still really isn't that blocking.
He's not really a
blocking.
Yeah,
we're
missing Pettigrew right now.
We are.
Like, weird enough to say, but we are missing Pettigrew right now. Right. Yes.
And the Michael Williams trade does look kind of bad in retrospect now. Obviously, the Lions couldn't have seen this coming.
Yeah.
Coming, but it does look bad in retrospect too.
Yeah, so. And I mean, the only other thing that people can really say is just put Amir Abdullah out there and stop giving carries to Joique Bell, which has a lot of merit to it. Joique Bell hasn't been really efficient, but I mean, there's a lot of questions on Amir Abdullah beyond the hype that, like, we still don't know. And this is always a be careful what you wish for kind of thing, because this could go, like, Amir Abdullah could go wrong real fast. He fumbled in that Denver game, and people, I mean, I don't really think that matters that much in the long run, but, you know, you could hear the echoes of the people, like, looking back in horror on seeing that pattern he had from Nebraska and trying to put two and two together.
Yeah,
which, and I don't think that's a problem, but I mean, yeah.
He was bailed out because his knee was barely down, so it didn't stand as a fumble. But
right. But
I think you're right. I mean, we don't really know what we have in Abdul. We know right now he's showing a little more flash and flair than Joique Bell probably will, maybe the rest of the season. I mean, Bell's coming off an injury. I think it's a little unrealistic to expect the world from him, but I mean, it's right to question whether he should really be getting double-digit carries at this point. I don't think Zach Zenner is the answer. Where
I was about to say, you don't believe in the ZZ Top Messiah in the white running back ready to go.
Here's what people have to realize:
Danny Woodhead number two
is as great as Amir Abdullah has been. I think he averaged 2 yards a carry against Denver. The real problem here is the offensive line.
His Minnesota game wasn't great either.
Yeah. I mean, his first game is really where all of his good rushing stats come from. So in terms of running back, I understand the Joique Bell frustration, but it's not going to solve a lot to throw another guy back there right now.
Yeah.
Just because the offensive line is really, really in trouble.
Let me take you off from, you know, suggestions on what to fix into the question of if they are tipping plays, because this suddenly has blown up. Like, Golden Tate's comments from 105.1 have, like, blown up significantly, actually. Right. I saw SB Nation NFL, again, like, tweeted out your article there. We got quite a bit of traffic on that. Close to 400 comments and rising on there. And I can imagine, and I can only imagine what's going on in the comments section of that. But on the other hand, we're also seeing some people coming out and saying, yeah, I mean, this isn't as big a deal as thought. Like, defenses, what was it? It was the former defense back Ryan Clark, who was basically saying, yeah, defenses, not unusual for them to call out plays. This is kind of the state of the NFL right now. So I don't know. Like, yeah, I think it is the state of the NFL, but I don't know where to start doing the calculus on this. What do you think?
I think it's somewhere in the middle here. I don't think it should be completely ignored, especially since this has come out from multiple sources now. You know, a couple defensive backs from Denver talked about knowing exactly what they were going to do.
Yeah, Drew Brees was talking about knowing everything.
Yeah, that report I didn't even know existed, but it was back in January. He talked about how he watched Lions tape and knew 95% of the plays before they happened. And to me, that just shows that Lombardi isn't growing as a coach. So, you know, he takes in Sean Payton's system from New Orleans and basically just completely duplicates it. And that's okay.
Yeah, a lot of these guys saying that they recognize it are coming from the Saints, aren't they?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, it's okay to borrow a system like that, but you need to develop it. You need to adjust. Everything in the NFL is about adjusting to to change.
ABS, always be scheming.
Yeah, exactly. So I get that defenses, you know, grow accustomed to certain offenses and can recognize formations like that, but there needs to be some sort of adjustment then on the offense. You can't continually show the same stuff and just expect your players to execute better than their players.
Yeah, and that's right there, that word execution, we've heard it from Lombardi nonstop. He's talking about players aren't executing. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not helpful either, because I'm not sure what that means. I really don't. But I would say on the same page, too, like, we're angry at Joe Lombardi now, but I really wonder how many, like, generationally, like, great, like, meaningful offensive coordinators could be out there ready for the taking, right? Like, I feel like this is probably a problem with more than just the Lions. It just, you know, this one just seems to have expressed itself in a more harrowing fashion.
It's funny because the Eagles, I got a couple tweets from the guys over at Bleeding Green Nation. Last week they were getting the same exact complaints that Chip Kelly was being too predictable and the defenses had figured him out. So this, I don't think this is an uncommon problem. That being said,
It's still a damning problem.
Yeah. It's still a problem. You look at a team like the Patriots, and obviously the Patriots are the epitome of the top of the NFL.
I would say like the Patriots, like just what they're saying there, like coordinators and coaches really don't make a ton of difference. For the Patriots, they absolutely do. You cannot look at anything they do. Like guys who go in there who are no good, then they're great for the Patriots, and they leave and they're no good again. That staff, whatever Belichick does, it works.
It amazes me how quickly that team can adapt to situations. Because 1 week they'll go out and throw for 400 yards. The next week they'll run for 300 and throw for 90. They can just adapt to any sort of situation like that. And to me, Lombardi shows he doesn't really have that adaptation gene in him. And, you know, that doesn't mean the offense can't work. It can, but it clearly hasn't, so there needs to be some sort of innovation there.
Right. And, you know, at some point, maybe he wakes up and realizes, like, man, I could be coaching for my job real quick here. There's always that stage in the NFL season where all of a sudden they pull out, like, every stop in a game and just throws a team for a loop.
Right. And I think that realization for Lombardi is going to come very soon, because I don't think he's met with the media since all this thing blew up. And the media is going to go for his jugular there, and it'll be interesting to see what he says. Probably a lot more of the execution word, but we'll see.
Suddenly that word is going to mean different things. Yeah. By the way, speaking of potential fixes that are probably not fixes, I see a lot of people talking about giving Jim Caldwell play calling reins. I don't think that helps it either.
No.
You're suddenly going to change his horse midstream. Like, that is a terrible idea.
Well, and that would require an entire scheme change too, because this isn't Caldwell's offense. He ran a completely different offense in Baltimore. So if you're asking Caldwell to take over, you're probably asking for a mid-season scheme change, which...
Well, when was the last time Jim Caldwell actually called plays? Because he was only a quarterback coach over at Baltimore, wasn't he? He wasn't actually the offensive coordinator. He was the offensive coordinator. My bad.
Yeah, I think he was for a little bit, and then as a head coach, I'm not sure if he called plays or not.
I forget if he called plays for the Colts.
Let's be honest. Peyton Manning probably called plays back then.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the last time he was truly calling plays, if not Baltimore, was probably Wake Forest back in the 90s.
Back when they were, you know, 4-8 or whatever.
I mean, that's every year for Wake Forest, except for like those Jim Grobe years. But yeah. Like I actually went to Wake Forest for 2 years. That's not a school that is known for its amazing football for any stretch of the imagination.
No.
But I mean, yeah, and then I saw you getting into it on Twitter with Josh. I want to make sure I get his name right, because I am terrible with pronouncing names, especially when they have like multiple syllables in it.
I think it's Katzenstein. Katzenstein?
Is it? Yeah, Katzenstein. 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 I'm going to pronounce it like that. Where Katzenstein was basically saying, this really isn't as much on Lombardi as it is, like, you got to start considering that it's on Stafford. Because, like, Stafford should be able to adjust these plays if they're not good and, you know, get this stuff going on the fly or, you know, and he was, like, picking out a couple of examples where, you know, he, like, Tate was open for a good, like, 10 seconds or something or whatever.
Yeah, or, you know, there was loose coverage on Calvin at the snap, I think, at one play. And he's right to a point. Like, I don't think Stafford has been good about – there's been a lot of talk about him calling out protection plays, and that's the reason why there's all these unmanned blockers – unmanned rushers. And I think he's right, but to be honest, I don't think I know – that for sure, and I don't think he knows that for sure, because we don't know what's being told to Stafford. We don't exactly know how much he's, you know, how much is his responsibility, how much is Joe Lombardi's responsibility. And let's be honest, Joe Lombardi's part of his job is to teach Stafford to read these offenses, or, you know, read the defenses, read protection, formations and all that stuff. So
right, you know, but I mean, I would say it's also getting a playbook to Stafford. My thing is, like, I don't know if at this point Stafford, you can really teach him too much more. He's the quarterback he's going to be at this point, so it's just a matter of, you know, scheming up for him.
Right. And, I mean, it's a part of learning the scheme. And, you know, now that he's, I think Lombardi's 20 games or so into his offensive coordinating, Stafford should have a pretty good grasp on his scheme. And if he doesn't, I don't know if that's on Stafford or if that's on Lombardi's teaching skills. I'm not there in the staff meetings, so it's hard for me to know.
And I would say, too, like, I'm going to revisit this at some point. It's just the matter of we started talking about last week, and I don't want to retread it here, but just how good is Stafford, really? And, you know, we're starting to see some of the attitudes change pretty quickly. So we'll have to revisit that at some point. And again, on the same time, too, you know, the offensive line is crumpling like tissue paper, which is always going to have an impact on this.
Yeah, it can derail an offense, and that's what we're seeing right now.
So I really don't know how much we really want to talk about the Seattle game, because other than that Marshawn Lynch may or may not be playing, there's really not a lot to hope for here, because Seattle, like, they've had their struggles early on, and I know that it's just the Bears. At least misery loves company in the NFC North, right? Suddenly,
I love the company, but not the company of Bears. Let's be honest.
You know what? I'll hold that thought. I'll do that for a later article about that. But the Seahawks, like, you're going up to play in Seattle. Like, this is trudging up there for execution at this point. I know they've struggled with St. Louis. I know they lost the Packers. I know, but I mean, they shut out the Bears, which, I mean, that was a terrifying game where every possession, John Boyes wrote a great article on, like, every possession about the Bears punting and just how awful that was. And yeah, like, what can we really say
I don't know if you put the whole big bad home field advantage for Seattle aside, I don't think this is a terrible matchup for the Lions. I think Seattle is going through quite a bit of offensive struggles right now, and that'll only be furthered by Marshawn Lynch being out of the game. If he's out of the game. But I think that bodes well for the Lions defense. I'd expect to see a performance like they did against Denver, where it was kind of so-so. We might see a play blow up or two. But I think they can hold Seattle to, you know, low 20s, maybe high teens in terms of points. And that'll keep them in the game. The Bears themselves were in that game the entire first half, and then things kind of blew up after Seattle returned the opening kickoff in the second half for a touchdown.
Outside of the Chargers game, like, just look at the points the Lions have held the opponents to. I mean, granted, I mean, they've lost all these, but 33, 26, 24, I could see it in the 20s.
Yeah.
I could see this and staying in the 20s.
Obviously, the big wild card here is how the Lions are going to come out on offense. And Seattle's defense has been a mixed bag. They're still a pretty good run defending team, but I was actually looking today. Their pass defense has been actually pretty terrible. The passer rating that they've allowed so far, I think, is 104.3, which is like sixth worst in the NFL, and that's with playing against Jimmy Clausen.
Well, so like again, going back to DVOA from Football Outsiders, 16th in rush defense, 22nd in pass versus Detroit's 14 and 24.
Right, so that's about the same as our defense, and people have not been saying great things about our defense so far.
Yeah, now I want to go and look at those numbers on the offense just to maybe put a little fear into it. So Detroit is 18 in pass, 32nd in rushing.
I think that's last.
Damn it. Yeah, that's that's like 20. That's like 2012 levels of damning right there. Yeah. This is pre, hey, we got Reggie Bush levels of we ain't doing crap on the ground.
This is Brian Calhoun era.
Oh my God. Whereas Seattle is sixth on rush in rank, 23rd in passing.
Right. So yeah, the big concern on defense will be stopping the Seahawks run game, which the Lions have been so-so at so far. Obviously with Adrian Peterson being the one exception. And
well, I mean, that's a fairly big exception.
It was. I don't think the Lions are as bad as they were in that game, though. There were obviously
Adrian Peterson's a big exception.
That's true. And, you know, Marshawn Lynch is also at least a minor exception there.
Yeah, and I mean, but if he does play, he'll be playing a little hurt, I understand, so. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think this is a fairly good matchup if you were just looking at this game on paper. You throw in that the Lions are going to be super desperate. Hopefully, Lombardi's going to be calling a play, you know, calling a game like he's on the hot seat that he probably is on, maybe. And then you throw in the home field advantage, which you can't really ignore when Seattle's only lost two games there in 2 years.
Well, Seattle is, by Vegas, a 10-point favorite, and I'm starting to see people starting to take Detroit in the points at this point. So that gives me a little hope, but...
10 points seems a little high, but then, you know, I think about it, and the Lions have basically been down by two possessions in every single game.
Yeah.
2 minutes left. And then, you know, in the first two games, they threw in a kind of garbage time touchdown and then hope
always,
for...
Always to Theo Riddick or Eric Ebron.
Yeah, Theo Riddick is like the anti-Darko Milicic. He's like the human losing cigar.
Oh, God. Bad memories.
Sorry.
Horrible memories.
Well, yeah, to just kind of tie a bow on the Seattle stuff, I do think this is a pretty good matchup. I think the Lions certainly have a chance, more so than most people are giving them credit for. That being said, I haven't done my on-paper stuff yet. I'm not expecting to pick the Lions, but I am expecting it to be a close competitive game, and I certainly hope it is since I'm going to be there.
I am still waiting for the Lowell NFL moment with the Lions, where they just win a game they're not supposed to. And once I said this last week, but I'll say it again this week, it feels like that. I'm going to keep saying that until the Lions actually win one.
Here's what I'm going to say. I think it more likely comes this week than it does next week against Arizona.
Oh, God. I was trashing Arizona in the preseason, too. I'm like, yeah, they're not going to be that good. And then, oh, my God, this defense.
Yeah. But we can hold off on that sorrow until next week.
For podcast number 5. Tune in then. Let's get on to the reader questions. I'm just making a note here on when we are getting on over to them. So once again, we asked for your reader questions on Twitter, on Facebook. I haven't even looked at the Facebook, actually. Do we have any questions from Facebook?
No, please never. Never know. No.
Okay. Yeah, you're... Wow. You shut that down really quickly. Do I even want to go look?
I would highly suggest no one that goes to Pride of Detroit ever look at the Facebook page. It is amazing in the most terrible ways you can imagine.
So we're just going to ignore. I don't want to ignore questions, but like some of y'all, you send in questions that we're going to be talking about anyway, that we are already talking about it, mostly the ones about Lombardi and the offense. And there's just some questions I'm just not really going to get to, like, you know, what, like the ownership and, you know, talking about the Fords. I mean, that's an interesting question, but I think in the middle of the season, I don't know.
Well, and it's hard to answer any sort of questions about ownership because, again, it falls into that territory where we don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, and
you can
like,
criticize them, but what are you criticizing them for?
I don't know. Like, I mean, I could criticize them, and then I'm just like, okay, what's that do? What now? So instead, we're going to go through some different questions. Also, I notice a lot of questions like, when do you see this ever picking up around? I'm like, man, it's the NFL.
You never know. The Lions could turn it around next week. They could turn around this week. They could go 2-14. We're still in that stage of the NFL where we're getting to know teams.
So just, I'm sorry. I'm just kind of, I'm out of it.
You don't want to talk about it. It's fine. Let's get to the more fun questions anyway.
I do want to get to this one serious one before we get into them, just to give an insight into my own thinking here. So JBD, sure. JB Det, I'm assuming that's DET for Detroit. Is there any true Lions fan who hasn't almost teared up at just how badly we've played this year? And I want to basically pose this one just because I haven't teared it up at all, and I'm a big Lions fan. In fact, this is the natural state of the Lions for me. I would not be a fan of this team if I couldn't take years where it's just like, oh, everything's on fire. if that was the case, I would have given up in 2008.
Right.
You look at all the bad things this team has had since, too. Like, perspective makes things so much funny when talking about the Detroit Lions. Like, we had Joey Harrington at quarterback. Just think and remember that and laugh.
Piano man.
Yeah.
No, I kind of envy you in that situation where you can kind of distance yourself emotionally. I don't have that skill yet. I'm really trying to build it up. But I used to kind of go by this code where if you aren't as emotionally invested in the team as I am, if you aren't, you know, throwing a tantrum after the Calvin Johnson rule play, then you aren't a true fan. But I finally let go of that whole, like, fandom thing, like, where fans have to react this one way. They have to, you know, throw tantrums or cry or whatever when the team does bad, because I recognize how immature I am when that happens.
Well, let me just say this is, like, when it's a big event, when there's actually something on the line that matters, like that Dallas game, yeah, I was mad at that. People can talk with me for 2 weeks after that. But if it's just, hey, we're starting out 0-3, I'm like, yeah, okay, I've seen this script before.
Right. I think what makes it particularly tough this year is I think Lions fans feel betrayed in some sort of sense, because optimism was so high, even like with the beat writers. The lowest you saw anyone predict was maybe 8-8, except for like these national guys who, of course, would get thrown under the bus by the Lions fandom for predicting.
I mean, but is that any different than what we usually do, just sipping on the Kool-Aid in the preseason?
Yeah, I understand that point, but coming off an 11-5 season, which was like a top five season of all time for Detroit.
Right.
There was at least a little you felt like there was a reason that you were buying into it this year rather than, you know.
Yeah. Well, just on the sake of moving it on, I'll just say this much. This is another example of the funniness of the Lions that I found throughout the years. You remember Marty Morningwick?
I try not to, but yes, I did.
And how he completely botched, didn't understand overtime rules, and decided that they're going to kick it away. That happened. Detroit Lions football. Jim Schwartz throwing those flags, not understanding what they're for, and then drop kicking the playbook.
It's been a great, great history, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't even gotten to Wayne Fonts. I don't even remember much of Wayne Fonts.
Hey, he was in the movie Jerry Maguire. Did you know that?
I did know that. Is he still alive? Like, every time I talk about Wayne Fonts, I'm like, oh, God, am I accidentally talking about someone who's dead and making fun of him because he probably died of something in regards to his weight? No, he's still alive. Okay, good.
He's still alive.
Where is he? Is he just hiding in a bunker?
Maybe. My favorite thing about Wayne Fonts is now that I looked online trying to find the official Detroit Lions font, like, you know, that they have that kind of wavy cursive font, and I found someone had made it and called it Wayne Fonts.
There you go. So I just want to say the last notes for him on Wikipedia says Fonts still supports local Detroit charities, occasion with his former players, although these opportunities have been fewer as of late. After serving briefly as a color commentator on the English language broadcast of NFL Europe games, Fonts retired to his home in Florida. He is frequently spotted at Tampa Bay Buccaneers games.
Oh.
Where he has a strong relation with, you know, Jim Gruden, father of John Gruden. But anyway, let's get on to the other questions now that that's out of the way. This is going to kind of go on the theme of getting less serious as we go on. So if you want the serious ones, we'll get them loaded up. Joe Barry or Joe Lombardi?
Oh, man. We're already at the Sophie's Choice part of the podcast, huh?
Oh, God. Bad as Lombardi is, I don't know if I could take someone tainted by that Washington organization. Like, get out of here.
Joe Lombardi's career is short enough as an offensive coordinator where I can pretend like he's going to turn it around. Joe Barry's legacy has been set in stone. So, you know, set fire to me if you need me, but I'm going to go Joe Lombardi.
So just as another great Wikipedia note, the paragraph here about when the Lions lost the New Orleans Saints and Rob Parker asked Rod Marinelli about whether his daughter had daughter married a better defensive coordinator. Like, that paragraph is longer than the rest of everything else that's written combined, I think, in his Wikipedia page. Like, that incident takes up the majority of his Wikipedia page.
Like, let's exonerate Joe Barry a little bit, because that, I mean, you go back and look at that roster and tell me who was worth coaching up. Who would have gotten coached up with a good defensive coordinator there?
Ugh.
Actually, you know what? Scratch that. Please don't look at that roster. Just pretend didn't exist, and let's move.
I was in Canada for those years. I was watching a different Lions team, the BC Lions, and they were good.
That makes you the winner of 2008.
Yep. Well, you know what was also happening in 2008 that made me kind of realize, yeah, maybe I should be watching some other sport. Besides the Red Wings, there was the fact that my Notre Dame Fighting Irish is being coached by Charlie Weiss. All in all, that was not a good year for football for me. Moving on here. Yeah. I should probably figure out whose is giving those questions. So that last one we read about Joe Barry, that was from Levy's Beard. So.
Thanks, Lev. Thanks for causing me that sort of stress.
So, Big Haircut asks, do you think there's a parallel universe where we are all Patriots fans and generally happy people? First off, we need to get to an underlying problem here with this question, Big Haircut, is that Patriots fans are not happy people. I don't know if you know many Patriots fans, but even though they are winning, Boston sports fans are unbelievably happy because they're never satisfied.
I have one buddy who's a big Patriots fan, and I can't believe how, especially at the beginning of last year when Tom Brady was going through those two or three games of struggles.
Because he didn't have Gronk.
Right. I'm like, you need to calm down. The Patriots are making the playoffs. They've already won the division, even if they're 2-2.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, you know, he's like, no. We need to burn it all down. It's like, you have Belichick, you have Brady, you're fine.
Well, it's not even that. It's that you can, if you're a Boston sports fan, your team can win, but there will be such a thing that went, tiny, minuscule thing that went wrong, that you won't be able to properly enjoy the win, and you will spend more time complaining about that than actually winning the championship. Right. So I always recall when the Red Sox beat the Tigers that one year, in the playoffs, and they were playing, I don't even remember who they were playing. Was it the Cardinals? Man,
you're just bringing up more bad memories for these people.
Yeah, that awful year.
For people that are listening.
Torrey Hunter Jr. flipping over the outfield fence. I'm sure Hook Slide's listening too. So, from Bless You Boys. So, but, I just remember Boston fans like, yeah, we've had these like two wonderful World Series titles before, but we haven't actually won the series at home yet, and we really want to. And I'm just like, you're a dynasty right now, and you're yelling about this. And likewise, just look at Patriots fans, just won a Super Bowl, complaining more about Deflategate. Won't shut up about Deflategate.
So I think to answer the question, no, there's not an alternate universe where we're Patriots fans. There may be an alternate universe where the Lions are actually good and we're all Lions fans, but knowing this fan base, I don't think we're still happy in that scenario.
I mean, there's probably an alternate universe where I took my cousin's advice and became a Steelers fan.
Oh, that would have paid out for a while.
Yeah. I think it still is, but
you know, I know this isn't the question, but I don't think I would trade my Lions fandom for anything.
No, of course not. Like, I love fires.
Well, and I love just the fight through adversity. I wouldn't be happy if the team just consistently won, and I know that's a lie. But
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like it's kind of fun to have that struggling team, and then, you know, the build up every year that it might finally turn around feels good.
All right, we got to keep moving on here. We're crunching time. So, big hair. This is big haircut again. Actually, I'm sorry. This was actually a better question, big haircut, and I should have read it about which kind of bear is best. But we'll have to save that for another time because I don't think I can do two questions from you. So,
although he did have quite a bit of good ones, so shout out to Big Haircut. Good job.
Yeah. Bear. I'll just go with the sloth bear, just real quick, because the sloth bear is awesome. But
I don't even have. I'd have to think about that one.
Yeah,
I don't like bears in general.
TJW Go Blue asks, if money and time were an issue, name the one country you'd travel to see the Lions play in and why. So I'm assuming this is becoming that once again we are going, that the Detroit Lions are going to London. And like, I don't know what it is with cat teams going to London. Maybe it's the company Jaguar, or Jaguar as they pronounce it there. So it's between the Jaguars and the Lions constantly going over there. Where I would like to see it. This is I know I have a French last name, but my family's mostly Italian. That would be fun to go see it. I am a bit of an AS Roma fan on the side. I would love to go see a game in Italy, in Rome, in the old country. That would be a classic.
That's
people wouldn't
good.
Understand what would be. I don't think most Italians would understand what would be going on. Maybe if we brought over some of our antics and like fought people, they would be like, all right, I can really get into this because now I understand. Now you're speaking our language, because Italian soccer fans love to fight and love to stab.
Okay. That's not exactly my ideal experience at a football game. I'm anti getting stabbed personally, but, you know, to each their own.
Well, just being stabbed in the butt. You'll survive.
Okay. That's not too bad. I think my answer to the question, and I've always just kind of wanted to travel to this country in general, is Australia. And I know they get a little rowdy with their sports too, so I think that would be a really fun environment to watch the Lions in if they got really into it.
This is interesting because I talked about this actually at one point in my college football podcast when we were talking about a bowl game in Australia. And I was saying what a terrible idea Australia is, because they're just, you know, you look away for a second and a dingo's running off with your punter, or it just rains spider. Have you seen where the spiders literally rained from the sky and covered entire grounds? Like, Australia is a crazy place.
Well, I mean, doesn't that
so many things
that seems apt for a Lions game? Like, they played in a snow blizzard that didn't resemble a football game at all. So if, you know, any sort of
so spiders raining from the sky is par for the course. I will say I did go down to Australia. I was there for the 2000 Olympics. Beautiful place. Just, you know, there's just so many things in Australia that want to kill you.
I just want a marsupial with my football. Is that so hard to ask?
Yes.
Oh, all right.
Okay, let's see. So actually, let's go to Twitter for some of these questions. Mark Chenier at Sir Hob asks, what do the Packers, Patriots, and Steelers do different than us? What would it take to win consistently? That's like searching for like a golden unicorn. Like, so many things have to go right, man.
Well, I think it's a little bit different for each one of those franchises. I honestly think 90 to 95% of the Patriots' success is Bill Belichick.
No, absolutely. He runs like
genius.
Well, I mean, he runs that front office as well too. And you know, you lucked into Tom Brady, who was just kind of like a nobody quarterback out of Michigan, and all of a sudden he blows up. He replaces Drew Bledsoe, and bam,
right.
Like, and then you just had great scouting personnel, and you know, some stuff on the side.
And then you got Green Bay, who somehow miraculously have now gone almost three decades with someone who's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Right, but understand too, like you're talking about win consistently. There was also a large stretch of time in there with the Packers where they weren't running crap.
Right.
Before that, Brett Favre and yeah.
And that's the difference right there. You have a quarterback who can.
And Aaron Rodgers is a demigod. Like he's breaking the game. He's that good.
He's the best quarterback in the league, and I'm not sure it's close.
Yeah, no, like Tom Brady is nice and all, but you saw what happens when you take away Gronk.
Right.
Like so, Aaron Rodgers does that. Like, you know, everyone's like, oh, he's screwed without Jordy Nelson. Nope, he just has other guys he'll throw it to.
Yeah, and his receivers keep going down. They lost Andrew Corliss, their tight end, for I think he just went on the short-term IR today. I think he lost a couple other receivers in the last few weeks and hasn't slowed down one bit. So you get a guy like that, you don't need to use the excuse like people use for Stafford that he doesn't have the weapons around him.
No, you an elite quarterback will make weapons around him. Right. He will mold it from the clay of the earth.
Yeah. And if you want to talk,
I think it's also remarkable too that he does it up in that stadium, in that climate, in the playoffs and late in the season, where it's like you're not really supposed to be a passing team up there. Like that was set up there to have a home field advantage on, like, you know, power running because it's really hard to throw the ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's doing it.
Yeah. And he not only is the best quarterback right now, he might be the best quarterback of our era. And that's including like Peyton Manning at his best.
Yeah. I mean, that almost seems heretical to think about it right now, but give Rodgers enough time, I think people will come around on that.
Yeah.
This was actually a fun one. One of my friends, she actually is from behind a private account, so I'm not going to give it out. She is a hockey fan, and she'd ask, and when I was putting this out, she said she would ask if there's a football 101 for hockey fans, but not sure if we could really put it together. And I just was thinking, because I know Hook Slide came in and was like, he did his hike curious thing.
Right.
So how to explain football to someone who's only ever watched hockey?
That's tough. It's hard for me to answer that question, well, first having off, grown up with football.
Yeah, well, I would say first off, if you're used to watching the NHL, Detroit isn't good in this sport. So let's start there.
Yep. You have to lower your expectations about 3,000-fold from the Red Wings.
I would also say that I know the trope is always hockey guys are like the toughest athletes out there, and that's actually true about football.
Right. Probably true.
Like, you can talk about, oh, but he played with a punctured lung. It's like, okay, whatever, he's got skates on. I don't care.
And also, that probably is happening with about half of the NFL players. They just never disclose it until the end of the season.
Oh yeah, no, like, yeah, like they're all having those concussions too. But let's
see,
that kind of grew a little grim. We don't use a stick. There's no puck. It's a ball, and there's no goalie. Like, actually, yeah. No. Wait, hold. I'll take that back. The entire defense is the goalie.
That's true. Yeah, there you go. Offsides is a lot different. My way into the NFL, for some reason, I was always obsessed with the rules, but for someone just joining the game, the rules are way too complicated at this point, so just give up on that. You'll never know what a catch is.
Yeah, like compared to the other sports out there, like football is just so, like, and I even watch stuff like rugby union, and like just on the idea of how the flow of action goes just separates football in so many ways. Maybe I'll write that up sometime. Like,
just know if there's a flag on the field, it's probably holding on the offense.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if it's a kick return, it's always blocking the back.
That's true, too.
Like, I 99% of those flags thrown on kick and punt returns, when something cool happens, there's going to be some block in the back, and it's just going to make everyone sad. Let's take one more question here, and then we should probably wrap it up because we're getting close to the about the 50-hour mark or so.
Ooh, 50 hours.
50 hours, yeah.
It does kind of feel like it's been that long a little bit.
Has it? These things fly by for me. I don't know, man.
Well, I mean, talking about Joe Lombardi and the Lions.
Well, do you want a serious one or you want a really stupid one?
Oh, come on. Give me the stupid. We need a little bit of stupidity in here.
Okay, well, we'll do both then. So Canna Dallaire asks, if Joe Lombardi were a tree, what kind of tree would he be?
Oh, that's a great question. I hope that's the smart question. Let's see. I'd go with a palm tree, because that Lombardi name is kind of like that sexy exotic name where you come with all these expectations, but in all honesty, a palm tree is pretty useless. It doesn't provide much shade. Its only fruit is a nasty coconut.
Whoa, like, take it, that back. I love coconut.
No, you think you do, but you don't really. Almond Joys are the worst creation ever.
Oh, we are going to have to fight. Like, there has to be, like, I'm a kind of guy who will sit down and drink coconut water.
Oh, God. I'm in L.A., so everyone drinks coconut water, and I just, I feel like I'm in the Truman Show, and everyone is, like, part of this social experiment trying to get me to drink coconut water, but it's never going to happen.
Because it's, like, one of the products for the show. Yeah. Spoiler alert. Okay, and this one, actually, there's a bunch asking about what you feel about, like, what should happen with the record, if we should think of a top 10 pick or something. I don't even know who's going to be going in the draft, so that's not a great question.
Let me get in on that real quick, because I do not ever root against the team, even when,
I don't believe in tanking. You really can't tank. Well, you can't even tank in this sport. Like, you can't do that. You can't take plays off like that, because you will just get seriously hurt.
The most baffling thing that the Lions fan base has ever done is root for 0-16. I did not understand.
I don't remember that at all, to be honest, but
it really irked me at the time. Like, I understand you,
because the Lions were in every one of those games too. Like, that 0-16 didn't happen just because they were just like the Jaguars sitting down and getting killed. Like, there were a lot of games where they got close to getting that win.
Yeah, there were some, but without getting into that season too much, I never root against the Lions. I don't care if, you know, a loss means they're going to get the next, you know, insert phenom here. But
yeah,
you never root against the Lions. Why watch the games if you're watching to root against them?
Gambling? Okay, last one here. JJ2672. Where do you think the development of Tomlinson is at? And why is he not starting being a the last part of this is just angry. Is basically, why is he not starting as, like, why is he not acting like a first rounder? Because offensive linemen need time to develop.
They do. He's like, very raw, and he's actually gotten a ton of playing time so far. I mean, Warford went down pretty early in the Denver game, and he started the opener.
Yeah, I don't have, like, the Pro Football Focus grades in front of me. I like to think that he's been growing each game decently. Like, linemen take time. They need to gel with the unit.
Right. I think people get a little impatient with non-skill players that are drafted high. I mean, they get,
right,
they get impatient because they expect with all first-round draft picks.
Right, but I mean, at the same time, too, like, I think that's right. You picked it right there when you said skill positions, because skill players, you can drop a rookie right out there and he'll do great. Linemen, this is a different beast.
Yeah. And it takes time to gel, and that's one of the things that's tried to keep me optimistic throughout, you know, this horrible 3-week stretch, is that the Lions don't have any sort of cohesiveness among the offensive line so far, because there's been a ton of injuries, and, you know, they've been plugging and playing all these different players, and Waddle is coming back and doesn't look like himself, and Cornelius Lucas is a mess, and we don't have a set five right now. So, you know, the communication, the gelling of the offensive line is never going to happen when we're bouncing around players in and out.
I think that'll wrap it up here for the podcast then. That's Jeremy Reisman, fearless leader on Twitter at Detroit on Lion. I'm Chris Lemieux, writer, lowly peon, and everything else who runs the podcast. I'm on Twitter at Malkovich Plan, the plan to save Europe using John Malkovich. And
you guys should follow him a little more. How many followers do you have right now?
I have, like, barely above 300, because I keep losing all the bots that, like, subscribe for about a week. I've been, like, bouncing around. I'm steadily above 300, but I'm bouncing between, like, 301 and 305.
Okay, you're not, like, quite at Ryan Matthews numbers, but you should be a little higher than that. You're doing a good job with this
podcast. No, it's all right. I don't promote myself as much as I should, and I need to.
All right. Well, you get my recommendation, if that means anything. I'm not sure it does.
Nothing means anything. We're Lions fans. This is just, you know, the twilight of our football love. We didn't even get to talk this week. You put up that great top five fans from the Detroit Lions, Denver Broncos thing, and there were some great pictures in there that I wanted to get through, but I didn't really have time to sit down with the whole thing, so they'll have to wait for another time.
Let's hope they do it again so we can maybe go through some more.
Like, I want to know what's going through that Browns guy's head, or the guy in the Jets jersey, or the guy, is that a can? I'm pretty sure there's a guy in the fifth
Chiefs
one.
Jersey.
Yes, yeah. That's what I thought. That's what I thought.
Right by, like, the face palmer.
That is the worst thing in the world. And I say that as one who's worn a Tigers cap to a Braves game that the Tigers weren't playing in. But, like, I think there's a different level when you're wearing a jersey of a team that's not involved at all. Like, what are you doing there?
I could get into a long argument about that, but
yeah, let's
save
that for
another time.
Goodbye, everyone. We'll see you next week.
See you later.